Welcome to the Supported Living Property Podcast with your host, me, Lisa Brown, the place to learn about supported living property investing. In this episode, Sally Warren, Managing Director of Paradigm and co-author of The REACH Standards, discusses why we all need to consider choice for people with a learning disability, why this matters for supported living, and she challenges us to think about homes, not schemes. In this packed episode, Sally also shares some practical advice for property investors and support providers. Hi, Sally. It's great to have you here today. Thank you for joining me. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks, Lisa. Yeah, looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, we've got lots to cover today.
Yeah, exactly.
So for those who don't know you, do you want to introduce yourself and tell people a bit about you?
Yeah, well, I'm Sally Warren. I run an organisation called Paradigm. My background, I'm a community worker, essentially. I just spent ages in the voluntary sector, naturally met lots of people living with the label of a learning disability, and got curious about, well, why aren't they fully included in society? What are the barriers that help them connect with each other and be part of the community? So a community worker at heart, with a fascination for people, how we connect and share ideas, and how we support people live good lives. So that's me, really. And I live in South London.
Love it. And Paradigm, because some people will have come across Paradigm, but a lot of people won't have done. Yep. Do you want to just explain what that is?
Yeah, well, we're a training and development agency that have been around. Do you know, I don't know when we even started, which is really bad, but I took over the organisation back in 2008. We're an independent training and development agency with a real passion for ensuring that people, particularly people with a learning disability who may also have autism or be autistic, get really great support to live good ordinary lives. So an ordinary life where they have the same highs as the rest of us. They live in ordinary streets and ordinary houses. They have the same range of choices as other citizens. They get to mix as equals in their community. And that's it. So everything we do is about working alongside people with learning disabilities, their families, organisations, councils, whoever will have us and have a conversation to really explore what more is possible. And our sort of strap is what more is possible. You know, we have things are, we support people now in a much more personal way than we used to in the past, but we have so far to go to ensure that people are seen as the beautiful, unique human beings they are. And that they get support to live the life in the way they want. We've got a long way to go. So what more is possible is our question for everyone that we meet, really. And we, whole range of stuff we do. We co-produce strategies for local authorities. We work with organisations to think about vision and creating plans, all in co-producing. That's genuine co-producing right from the start of the nugget, working alongside. We have associates with lived experience of learning disabilities that work alongside me. So over 80% of our work is co-facilitated. We do work around sexuality and relationships to help local authorities co-produce policies and procedures for that. We are currently co-producing the supported decision-making resource to really bring supported decision-making to people and families to ensure people know their rights and are really supported to live their life and make the decisions that are right for them. And we also host the Great Support Movement, which is a movement that we created, I think, 4 years ago now, because I was getting really concerned that I would travel around the country and meet wonderful support workers who really want to be the best they can be, who, when they're in conversation with me and my colleagues co-facilitating, they can see sort of light bulb moments. They go, oh, we didn't know we could do that. Oh, really? And so often what happens is support workers work within an organisation, know how things are done in the organisation. And it's really hard sometimes to find that inspirational, challenging, developmental stuff that goes on beyond. So we asked over 350 people with a learning disability and their families what great support meant to them. And they came up with incredible number of ideas. And we had post-it notes and pictures and ping pong balls and artwork and loads of stuff saying this is important to me. But we distilled this down to 8 characteristics. So the Great Support Movement is founded on these 8 characteristics. And what people told us they wanted was support workers who were adventurous, friendly, encouraging, supportive of their loving, connecting, advocating, respectful, and resourceful. So the movement is built on how we grow more of those skills within the country. So we connect support workers across the country to a whole range of stuff. And this is the stuff that sort of feeds my soul, because you keep meeting people that just get really excited and want to do things. But it also drives my anger that I see as a positive thing for me, and my sadness, because actually what most people with a learning disability said they wanted in a support worker was someone who likes them.
So fundamental.
I just want someone who likes me to come into my home and be with me, which links then with REACH and the REACH standards. We're probably best known for is the REACH standards in support for living that we'll talk about a bit more. But
certainly the REACH standards is the thing that most people will have come across Paradigm for. But I think the other work is so, so key. And I think anyone who's interested in learning disabilities from all different angles really should kind of have a weather eye on what you guys are up to, because there is so much stuff that's happening, and you're so influential in change and the way things should or could be. Yeah. But let's talk about the REACH standards, because that's the thing that lots of people will have heard of. And those who haven't heard of it, do you want to explain what they are?
Well, this is so hard. This should be simple. This is what I live and breathe. The REACH standards, they are a set of standards that are designed to ensure we keep exploring what more is possible, and we keep working to a future where people are being supported to live like other citizens. And that's it. So no two people have got the same desires, expectations, wants or needs, have they? No two people. No. Everybody's unique. So the REACH standards, they were launched back in 2002, and they're still the most nationally recognised standards. But the practical guide was launched in 2019, which is the most updated resource that I'll tell you about. But they encourage us all to stay refreshingly curious and committed to discovering what a good ordinary life looks like for each person we support. And that's the challenge. It's all about each person we support. What does a good life look like for them? Once we discover that, we can design with them what a good life looks like. And whether that's the property they want to live in, the house where they want to live, the location, how they're supported, how they see their family, you know, how they get to live with their boyfriend or girlfriend, all of that's there. But fundamentally, the REACH standards are about reminding us of the human rights of all and our duty to protect them. We've got to protect them. And that's what it's about. So they've existed since 2002. Yeah. Sorry, Lisa.
No. I think for some people, they assume that someone with a learning disability doesn't have the ability to make decisions, to express their opinions. Mm. That it needs to be done for them. That's still a perception in a lot of society, isn't it? And I think the whole thing with the REACH standards is it's challenging that in a very practical way, isn't it?
I think so. It's all rooted in conversations, isn't it? And when I say conversations, I absolutely understand some of those are non-verbal communications. So by discovering who somebody is, we're currently working with lots of people who don't use words to communicate, who live in a particular setting, and exploring with them, those who know and love them, what they want and need in their life. I wouldn't say it's easy, because we're strangers coming in. But for the people that know them well, you can just get this rich information. All we need to do is ask these questions, go in as curious people, going, well, tell us a bit more about Lisa likes about the brick wall behind her there. Why would you choose that? Well, Lisa likes, you know. So, you know, and it's sometimes the external eye seeing and getting to know someone can just help unpick. So we encourage you, as I said, to be refreshingly curious. And I sometimes, as providers, I'd use the term professionals, we sometimes forget just to step back and question what we think we know. And REACH is designed to do that in a very, very practical way. So, and I think over the years, we've grown increasingly concerned about the fact that supported living has become a model or a service type. So there's an assumption if you deregister and you're no longer a registered home, you are supported living. And I'm like, well, do you know what? No, you're not. If you're still not choosing who comes in your front door, if you're still not choosing who supports you, if you're still not choosing where you live and who you live with and how you live your life, then actually you're in a deregistered care home. Now, I know that good support can happen in a registered care home, so I'm not saying they're the enemy, but let's be honest about this. And some of our work with John O'Brien over the years in the States, amazing. He just said to us one day, well, let's not pretend. Let's not pretend everything's perfect. Let's stay curious and let's keep asking what is possible, what more is possible. And I think that was our real concern. And when we were working with families and self-advocates, redrafting the REACH standards for the practical guide in 2018, people kept saying to me, Sally, what's supported living again? What is it? And I said, well, it's when you have a tenancy, and I mean a real tenancy here. I've listened to something, this is a real tenancy. You understand your rights and your law. So look at the real tenancy test with NDTI. It's there, you know, real tenancy. You have a tenancy, so you have the same security as other citizens, or you part by a property with someone like My Safe Homes helping you, you part by a property. But actually when you're living, you get some support to live your life. And for the people we focus on, most people get some paid support. So it's the separation of that. So you are supported to live in your home. So these people kept saying, oh, support for living then. Why don't you just call it support for living? I went, oh, that's a good point. So if you notice, the REACH practical guide is REACH support for living. Because actually, that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Absolutely. It makes sense.
So that's yeah.
And
I haven't told you what the REACH standards are, have I, though? I don't know how we do this on the screen.
I think probably it's best that we'll, you know, obviously we'll put a link to it so people can find your website and find them, I think, you know, so that people can understand them. You've got a clever way of summarizing them.
Well, I could quickly read out the nine, or is that too much?
No, go for it, because I think if you're listening, I think it's important to hear.
Yeah, so. Okay. So the REACH standards are, I choose who I live with. I choose where I live. I have my own home with a tenancy or ownership. I choose who supports me and how I'm supported. I choose my friends and my relationships. I get help to make changes in my life. I choose how to be healthy and safe. I choose how I'm part of my community, and I have the same rights and responsibilities as other citizens. So that's the standards. And whenever we just say to people we work with, do you think that's unreasonable? Most people go, no.
No.
And if I'm honest, though, a lot of people do struggle with the word I choose. We get very hung up on I choose how to be healthy and safe. Well, yeah. You know, we have a duty as support workers and providers to support people to make informed decisions. But it is about choice. It's about human rights around the whole thing as well. And I don't mean to make that sound easier. I know it's not easy, but choice is fundamental to that. And that's people who use a whole range of incredible skills to communicate that may not be verbal.
It's really listening, isn't it? Really, really paying attention, listening, and getting to understand the people you're supporting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess. Absolutely. And I think it's something that's very easy for people to pay lip service to say, oh yeah, I've read the REACH standards. Yeah, 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 we've done that. I've had that conversation, you know, I'm sure you have too. Yeah, 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 we've done that. But actually, some of those, obviously, from my point of view and the stuff we come across are really, really key around the who I choose who I live with and I choose where I live. Those ones are really, really fundamental, aren't they? And actually the, oh, there's a vacancy in this 5-bed house, so that person can go there. Is that them choosing? Is that, you know, that's where the REACH standards come in, isn't it? Exactly. Is does that person want to live with those other individuals, or do the other individuals want to live with them?
It's so hard. And when we were producing the latest standards that were launched in 2019 as a free practical guide, I keep stressing that we wanted to make it free. We do a lot of open source sharing at Paradigm, take them, use them, but we do training to help implement and back them up, obviously. But there was a big debate between me and colleagues around, should it be I choose who I live with first or I choose where I live? Where for me, it's clear, unless you know who someone wants to live with, how can you find a property? Because if you want to live on your own, you need to do one. If you want to live with two people, that's it. So, but I think what you're raising there is one of the biggest challenges we face on our REACH training that we've probably met, worked with 50 organisations in the last year or so. And the most common theme is we have little control over where people live. If there's an empty room, a commissioner might say, you have to take this person. Money, well, you will know that empty rooms cost money. And our challenge always to organisations is, okay, what more is possible? what can you do to get closer? So I've worked recently with a support team, some managers involved, and they were saying, look, get real, Sally. Our local authority will refer people to us for an empty room and that's it. And I'm going, okay, right. So what more is possible? What's in your gift to do now to make sure the people you work for know that you're in their corner? So they came up with the idea that, okay, there are three people living in the house. There was an empty room because someone had moved out. And they came up with the idea, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to chat with the people that live in the house. We're going to ask them what sort of housemate they want. And we'll write a description of the ideal housemate. And we will send that to the local authority. So they won't wait for the local authority to refer. They'll say, here's the sort of person we want in this room. And then, so in the same way, there was another organisation, this was about 3 years ago, that said there was someone moving into a house where that person absolutely had the right to really great life, great support and a good life. But they knew moving into the house with the two people that lived there would not get that for the person. It was likely to lead to distress for them and the others and increase behaviours that we then start to call challenging. So why would we do that? So the support workers in the end, they said, OK, what we're going to do is we're going to write to our manager and express our concern about the fact this person's moving in and ask them to do something. And then if they don't, we'll ask the manager to make sure the commissioner knows we're saying we think this is not a good fit for this person. So it's that sense of what more is possible. What can we do as individuals to push back? Because if we don't listen to our hearts and minds, if we don't value the people we work for and what they want and need, if we don't value support workers and their knowledge of the individual, you end up getting a system rather than someone's home. You end up with people being sort of beaten down and, well, it's not worth speaking up for the values anymore because it's not possible, is it? Now, we know that money is tight. We know that it's really hard, but we don't accept that people's human rights are gradually eroded because we have to fit them into a system.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a really tricky balance, isn't it? Because I hear people every day struggling, really struggling to get hold of properties, just delighted they have somewhere safe for someone to be.
Absolutely.
And so therefore, there is in the real world going to have to be some kind of balance in there, isn't there? But I think, like you're saying, it's about pushing and challenging for it to be the best it can be. And giving people the strength to do that. And I think that some of the things you said there, you know, just simple things about escalating concerns are really key things that everyone can do, you know, and make sure that whoever is the decision maker is aware that there are other issues within it. It's not a straightforward thing, you know. They're really, really key, really important. And I think for anyone who's in this space who isn't familiar with the REACH standards and hasn't looked at them, I really do encourage you to have a look. We'll put the links in the show notes so people can find them and access the resources around that to learn more about it, to make sure that they are doing all they can to demonstrate choice and make sure that that's there. For property investors who are listening to this, who are thinking, you know, what does this mean for me, or what do I need to know about this, or what do I need to think about? What are your thoughts there, Sally?
Can I just go back a little bit? Because yeah. I honestly, when I start chatting and getting emotional,
I love it. Go for it.
I know. But the REACH standards are, they're not aspirational. They're not, I can't say that. The REACH standards are there. They are set of standards to ensure, work towards ensuring that people have great supports with good ordinary lives. But there has to be, I'm going to use the word pragmatic approach to achieving that. But that is based on the way we encourage people to use the standards is to have a conversation, verbal or non-verbal, get to know the person you support, feed that into your management team if you're working for a provider organisation so they can identify themes and feed that into working with their residential social landlords, their housing associations, their identifying need, feed it into their strategies in the organisation, feed it into updating, refreshing, truly personalising their policies and procedures. That in turn feeds in as evidence for the Care Quality Commission and for the local commissioners. So I don't want to come across as this is all about, you know, it is absolutely about values and human rights. But it's actually a very practical resource to help you learn what the people you work for want and need as an organisation to then work with property investors and resident, you know, landlords and housing associations, but also to evidence that. So I think that's the heart of it, is the rights of people to live good, ordinary lives. But it's absolutely there as a resource to drive it. So coming back to property investors, in the practical guide, part three sort of gives you clues to the sort of things that you should ensure the people you work for have in order to achieve that standard. It's not an exhaustive list. It's a little list to prompt you. And there are hyperlinks in there that take you to some resources around the country, because we're just constantly always trying to share. I went to three organisations, Aldingbourne Trust, Get a Life and Exclusively Inclusive, and said to them, if you were doing this podcast, what would you want to say to property investors? Brilliant. So I've got some things from them, which I think they're the people there every day that doing this. So, and the first thing that came out is one person at a time. Designing a house has to be done one person at a time. So designing someone's home has to be done one person at a time. So if a home's unique to each of us, we need to work out with each person what's right for that person in terms of designing the physical space, identifying where their home is and how we do that. We've got lots of practical responses, and what I can do is just type this up as a little flyer for you with some of the tips that I've gathered. But that's important. But the other clear message is focus on ordinary houses, flats, bungalows in ordinary streets. That's the natural starting point in terms of finding community. That anything that looks like a service is immediate block or barrier. So we have to think about everything, don't we? What's it? Does it look like another house in the street, or is there a different sign outside? You know, there should never be a sign saying supported living here with an arrow. It was just, you know, I'm sure that, well, it does happen. I know it happens. But
no, but absolutely. I interviewed John Cowman from Mencap, and he said that I like to drive down the street and not know which one of the properties is the supported living property.
Totally. You know? Yeah. And years ago, 30, 40, maybe 50 years, social revalorization is the whole thing about how you just, you want to be invisible, really, don't you? You want to be part of the community and being seen. So don't make things. You know, we understand the economic argument for creating blocks of flats and filling those, but I cannot honestly say I would ever agree with that. I understand the economic argument, but I can't see, you know, why we would say to people where you're going to live in a house with eight other flats, they're all people with learning disability. I really struggle. I think lots of the people we work for struggle with that. I think there's something about just being part of your neighbourhood, part of your community, means you just want to be seen as that. So why wouldn't we have mixed blocks of flats and stuff and involve them? But it's like you said earlier, it's the fine line, isn't it? And I really struggle with that fine line. And I think if there is a block of flats, some of the musts are, how do you be a good neighbour? How do you avoid making sure there's one provider that has four staff on duty and whoever's on duty will go and turn up in your flat and do your support? Because that's not okay. I don't want a stranger coming in my home to offer my support. So I think there are some lines that are crossed that we would struggle to go, it's okay. Because imagine it's you or someone you know or love. But that's hard. Well, it's an interesting comment as well from one of our colleagues in Coventry, which, remember, this is not a hospital setting. Whatever you create in terms of property investor, it's not a hospital setting. So don't try and recreate the same level of safety and security because it's just not possible and it's not right. So what she said clearly is work out what's essential for safety for that person. So I totally understand sometimes we're talking about whether you should have mirrors or shouldn't, whether you need two-way stuff, whether you need more space, but work that out with the person and provide it in an ordinary house. And I think there are very little things, you will know this, Lisa, you can go into some places and they just feel like a hospital ward. And I couldn't say it's because of the way the building's built, but it is the way some of the fixtures and fittings are done that suddenly become, ooh.
We had this, what the bungalow that I did for the young man with learning disabilities, I was asked to put Altro flooring in, which is hospital flooring. Yes. And that was the spec. Everyone said it had to be this flooring. And I was like, it looks like a hospital. It feels like a hospital bathroom. So we did everything else with the rest of the bathroom to try and make it feel like we put green grout on it and we did all kinds of stuff. But you're right. Sometimes, you know, and that's often it's the clinicians giving the spec and saying this is what needs to be there, because sometimes it's because they don't know anything else. Sometimes it's because that's what's familiar to them. And sometimes it's because it's what's within budget. But it's about trying to be a bit creative as the property investor to go, actually, we'll make this a home first. What can we do to make this feel like someone's home?
And I think that comes from, you know, we need to value families, don't we, and people. And families, if they've had their loved one in a bad place before, they won't be expecting a lot more. So how can we open up the imagination of families? Go, do you know what? An ordinary house is what we're looking for. We do need to make sure there aren't star objects. Or, you know, my friend, I've got a friend who's got a learning disability. You know, she moved into a place recently, and I'm truly shocked by the lack of preparation the landlord did. But it's not the landlord's fault. The support provider didn't ask for it. So actually, you know, my friend has, you know, regular seizures. I mean, regularly, talking about multiple seizures a day, and there are sharp edges everywhere. The wet room that was created wasn't a wet room at all. It's got a big step in it. And the hand basin is outside of the door and the toilet. So it's just crazy. But it's about relationships, isn't it? So it's about how we open up people's hearts and minds and go, actually, what would a good house really look like for Sally or Lisa? And it would probably be a bit different because we're different women. What needs to be there for safety reasons? And help the family stretch that, going, what's really necessary for safety? And how much can be there? And sometimes we're taking away stuff we put in because people needed it. But we also, a clear message was as well, is to make sure the person's house, their home, is there for life if they want it. If they want to move, that's fine. But as they change, how can we ensure that if they're connected with their community and they're part of that, how can we help them stay there for as long as they want if their needs change? And that can be less support, or more physical adaptions or less physical adaptions, can't it? But that's all about relationships. You know, local transport came up, and we can't underestimate the need to be near local transport and shops. You know, yeah. Sorry, Lisa, yeah.
No, completely. You know, I get sent all these sites. This is perfect for supported living, Lisa. It's like 30 miles outside of a village somewhere. You're just like, well, how's anyone going to get anywhere? How are the staff going to get there?
Lisa. And it was said a lot, but it seems to be forgotten a lot as well. So I presume
really, really key to remind people, absolutely, being in the community, being able to access the community.
Yeah. I think as well for property investors, I don't know technically how this works, I'll be honest, but, you know, some people I know do part buy their own properties through shared ownership. So My Safe Homes are very good at helping people do that. Often people with, I hate the term complex needs, but with a lot of physical support needs and a learning disability, it can work really well around designing that. So I think we just need to be open about how people can invest and how people can live with a tenancy or part ownership and get that right for them. But it gives a real security, I imagine, if you're investing in your own home and that matures with you over years as well. And then, Lisa, you can imagine there's a whole list of things around the practical stuff. But I was really struck by things like, don't forget that even if someone lives on their own, they're likely to need support. Therefore, the bathroom might need to be big enough for two people to be in, and the kitchen big enough to have someone to assist you to cook. And that's like just really interesting, that practical stuff. And how maybe if someone has a loud way of communicating, how are we sorting out the soundproofing from the start, rather than when the neighbours start complaining? So I support a woman at the moment who loves to sing. She loves, and actually she has a stammer that causes her enormous distress. She's 61 years old. And if she talks to you, she'll stammer. If she sings, she doesn't stammer. But she lives in a flat in a terrace street in South London. And the minute she sings, the neighbours bang on the wall. To the point we've had a police complaint, and we had a police meeting recently to say how, and they're almost saying to her, you can only sing between these hours. So knowing the person, putting stuff in place is really important.
And then soundproofing is always a real challenge. That's really, really complex to get
right.
Yeah,
it's amazing, isn't it? I think it was interesting as well, comments around assistive technology. You know, if I'm going to read what they said here. So if designing something for people who would benefit from assistive technology, design is in at the beginning, not after the lovely painting's being done, because that sort of things comes after, doesn't it? And there's, you know, this colleague said there's been so much assistive technology abandoned due to expensive stuff being put in as well. So be really clear, who is it there to benefit? Is it going to benefit? Is it usable? Can it be put in at the right time? And obviously we have to learn over time. But things like video entry systems and good light outside lighting are worth their weight in gold, she said. She went on to say, don't use cheap fixtures and fittings. It's a pretty basic thing, isn't it? But it's you know, and I like the last comment as well from someone who said, oh, and don't forget outside bin storage. Honestly, it's a thing. So I suppose the overarching, I started off those with more about, remember, it's somebody's home. It's not a scheme. We really flinch every time we hear scheme. We understand some of that language. But if we start using language like models and services and schemes, it starts to dehumanize. And I know that's not the intention of most people who use that language, but there's something about it in the culture that it does just creep in. And we forget that we're here working for people who have the same rights as others, who need somewhere good to live with the right support. And that's it, really. But that in terms of that, but we're no experts with property investors, but...
Sally, that's the essence of it, isn't it? Is what, yeah. You know, that your summary there was really, really key. And I think that's the takeaway message for people, is to remember that and keep that central when they are developing properties or they're coming up with support for people, and making sure that that is key to it. So
and don't be scared to phone people. I mean, I talk to many people saying I've got a house I'm thinking of renting out. Don't be scared to talk and connect, and we all learn in this. And don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't, you know, we're not going to jump on people because they use a word we think isn't right and stuff. It's about the genuine intention to get it right. And that way, as you found out through all your work, we can get it right, can't we? We can.
It's like it's asking the questions. It's being curious. It's asking the stupid question. Actually, I've done that with an OT this morning about a property. Definitely. Do we really need to do that? Why? Oh, I hadn't really thought about that. You know, and actually, if you, just asking, understanding and challenging a little.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Sally. It's been great chatting to you today. Thank you for joining us. We'll put the contact details for Paradigm and the REACH standards and the other resources we've talked about in the show notes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks.